view on the 17th of July 2002 with Millard Gamble, retired from the DuPont Company, and the interviewer is Arnold Thackeray. Millard, can you begin by telling me something about your origins, your family, your early life?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I was born March 8, 1919, in Brooklyn, New York, the son of a then naval officer. I spent 15 years in Westfield, New Jersey, graduating from Westfield High School in 1937. I then went to Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. It's a liberal arts school, one of those little free schools, Williams Amherst Wesleyan. And I graduated in 1941 with a BA in social science. My first job was with the Surplus Marketing Administration in the Department of Agriculture, which was the first attempt to get rid of surplus foods, which had been become exaggerated because of government subsidies, and they either gave the food away to the needy or they set up a school lunch program, which that's how EAT got started. And I was sort of mixed up in that when I first got out of college, but having been acquainted, or kept very acquainted with what was going on in the world, in September of 1941, I applied for a commission in the United States Navy and was successful, partially because I had been an enlisted man in the Naval Reserve my last year and a half in high school. I was appointed to the Commandant's Office, Naval Operating Base San Pedro, in early November 1941. After 4 years of varied assignments in the Pacific and Washington, D.C., I resigned my commission and was released November 15, 1941. About this same time, I married my current wife, Gloria Hine, from she had grown up in Westfield. She had gone on to Wellesley, but I kept in touch with her that whole time. I started to work for the DuPont Company. Well, first I want to say that how I ever even heard of DuPont, and another naval officer that I met actually in 1942 said to me one day in 1942, "What are you going to do after the war?" Well, I said, "If I'm alive, I have zero idea, really. But I've got to work. I have no money, and I've got a wife to support." And by that time, I think I had one job, and went on to have four. But he said, "Well, I have been working for the last 8 or 9 years for the DuPont Company in Wilmington, Delaware, where I grew up." And he said, "Would you consider that?" And I said, "Well, frankly, I've never heard of Wilmington, Delaware or the DuPont Company." So he told me a little bit about it, and I fortunately, he said, "I'm going to write my boss and tell him about you." And he said, "Because I may not be here, and of course you may not, but the end of the war, but I suggest you contact him at the end of the war." And so when I was considering what to do, I did that, and I actually came up, and I think it was in something like October 1941, or maybe even September it was, and had an interview up here. Well, I liked...
45.
This was in 1945, in September, October. I may have said, maybe I didn't, but I got out of the service pretty quickly because I'd been in this enlisted service before the war, well, when I was in high school. But in any event, I liked what I saw at DuPont and liked Wilmington. And when I considered it opposite other jobs, I could have made a little more money elsewhere. But I took the job and started to work for the company in the tech, in what was then called the rayon department, but became the textile fibers department. But on December 1st, 1945, my first assignment was at the Spruance plant in Richmond, Virginia, where I was for 3 months in an orientation program in the rayon manufacturing operation and organization. Viscose rayon filament for apparel and also a new tire yarn were produced there. After I finished this, I was sent to Wilmington for a 4 to 5 week orientation of the organization with emphasis on sales. And in April of 1946, I was assigned as a salesman in the Charlotte, North Carolina office. For almost 3 years, I sold rayon filament covering 12 states in the southeast United States, and then staple fiber, which was went into entirely different uses than the filament. The next stage was in February 1st, 1949, I became the Northeast District Salesman in Providence, Rhode Island, in charge of selling rayon staple in New England, New York, and Pennsylvania. In November 1950, I was transferred to Wilmington as assistant manager of Cordura rayon sales to the rubber industry. And then I was made manager of that group in August 1951. In April 1953, I was moved to the Seaford Nylon plant as a supervisor in training. And then in May 1954, I was promoted and went back to Wilmington as assistant manager of acetate, of the acetate sales division. And then in December, I was made assistant manager of nylon sales. You might cut that off for a minute now.
All right, let's pause and backtrack, if we may.
Sure.
And first of all, your early years. Did you have siblings yourself?
I had a brother 4 years younger than I was, who died very tragically when he was about, I think he was 10 or 11. He fell out of a tree and got bone cancer, and went into his blood and killed him. And then I had a sister who was 7 years younger, and that was the extent of our family. You know, my mother was an artist, and my father was, when he got out of the Navy, went to work for the Marine Department of Standard Oil, New Jersey, which is now Exxon.
That's why you were in Westfield.
That's why I was in Westfield, and because he was commuting, really, to New York. And my mother and father were divorced early, and he married and had a son who's my half brother. he also worked for the Department of Georgia Tech, and he...
This was following in your footsteps, is it?
A little bit. My sons didn't... I had two sons and two daughters, and none of them would touch anything that looked like a big company. I think watching their grandfather and my career was too encompassing for them, and one became an entrepreneur, and the other, I guess, he's in the San Juan Islands of in the state of Washington, and is a key environmentalist, and he's started some subsidized housing up there that's really a fantastic model for other sections of the country, and he doesn't care whether he makes it. He wants to have enough money to eat and live decently, but he's not interested, like my older son. He's not a three-shift, seven-day guy, which my wife says is new to me. And I said, heck, I wasn't anywhere near as bad as he is. He's terrible. And there's a workaholic and all that stuff.
Entrepreneur in what?
Well, he's been in... He was a specialist when he graduated from college in group insurance. And he eventually started his own company, and then sold that at a big profit. Then he branched into real estate and... several other things, and it was fairly, well, I'd say he had his successes and failures, but he stayed way ahead of the game, and he lives today in St. Petersburg, Florida. St. Petersburg Beach, I'm sorry, it's called St. Pete Beach legally. But then my daughters, the first daughter was about 6 or 7 years younger than my second son. The second son was only 16 months apart from my elder son, but the daughter, who was born in January 49, is a college professor, and she's teaches out at San Diego State at the moment. She was at UCLA, but she's sort of the head of the archaeology department there, and is very much mixed up in that. And my youngest daughter is Vermont. She's still another 8 years younger than our first daughter. And she's up in Rutland, Vermont, and is an officer in Central Vermont, the public utility up there.
Sounds as if you've covered the country.
Yeah. My wife was a nut on making the kids independent, and they sure have been. They're all very different, and it's night and day from each other, but they've done all great on their own, and fine.
What did your own sister do?
My own sister she was very academically oriented, and she taught. She was taught at a girls, I guess called boarding school or whatever first, and then she was at Columbia, and I introduced her to another DuPont salesman in New York at the time, and she ended up marrying him and had a very happy life with him. He died, unfortunately, about 4 or 5 years ago. She lives in Lancaster, Pennsylvania right now. But that's my only living sibling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you in Westfield, were you in the local public school that
yes,
you were in?
Yes, the local public school. Mm-hmm. In fact, in Westfield, which is you could class it as a commuting town, it was had a fantastic school system there, and no one almost went to prep school. percent, because Westfield was accepted at all the colleges. My wife went right into Wellesley, and I was I didn't go through the fact, but I had tried to go to the Naval Academy. I was actually in there for 2 days, and they flunked me on an eye test that was supposed to predict how your eyes would be after 4 years of engineering studies and so on. And they said mine would be bad, flunked me. I appealed it, lost. And but the thing was repealed when the war started, because they didn't give a damn then whether you had glasses on or not. But they, in those days, they didn't want anybody on the bridge in the Navy who had to wear eyeglasses. So I had to go hunting for a college. But when they knew I was a fairly decent student at Westfield High School, I was accepted Princeton and Dartmouth and well, anyway, anywhere I went almost. But in those days, this is very hard to believe. I couldn't believe it then. They said there are no rooms. Oh, I said, I can find a room. I went door to door. I couldn't get a room in Princeton or up in Hanover, New Hampshire. And some friend of mine from Westfield said they were Wesleyan, and said, I think you'd love this, come up there. Well, they, same story, no rooms. But the director of admissions, thank God, said, listen, if I have to put you up in my house, I want you to come here. Well, he didn't have to do it. He did something and got a room. But I was very happy I went there. It was a great school. But I'm branching off a little too much.
So the Navy, I mean, this is coming from your father initially.
Yes.
And you really, you went to the Naval ROTC, that you kept that alive.
No, I never went to the ROTC. No, I went to the Naval Reserve as an enlisted man. And the only reason I was doing that, and I didn't get into that, was in high school, was to get an appointment to the Naval Academy. You either had to get your representative or senator to appoint you, or, and you, to get that, you had to be very politically oriented. My father was not, and so we had no pull with any of the politicians, so the only other way was to go on the Naval Reserve, which I did. And every week I'd go to drills and we went out to sea and everything else. But that's the reason I went in there, was to get in the Naval Academy. And I did get in, but then flunked that eye test.
If I think Navy, I think engineering, which is kind of different from social science.
Absolutely. And I, you see, I didn't get into social science training until I was at Wesleyan. And in high school, I didn't know what. But I sensed that I was no engineer, because I'm about the dumbest guy that ever lived mechanically. I mean, I was not scientific, basically. And in high school, a little chemistry we had, I hated it. At Wesleyan, I really didn't know what I was going to major in for a long time, but it had a, what I thought was one of the most fantastic professors I've ever seen. It was actually a German Jew named Sigmund Neumann, who was became a key professor there. But he taught all kinds of things that I didn't think I'd be interested in, that the degree you got if you took all these varied courses, and they were very varied, from philosophy to the economic history of Europe to, might say, world history to, but anyway, I ended up majoring in, under him, and the degree for that at that time was social science. I don't know what it would be today, but.
So how did you get from that to the Department of Agriculture? Jobs were scarce at that time, is that true?
That is very true. And, well, this was very interesting. They had a, I'm trying to remember the name of it. They had a program in Washington that had started in probably about 1939 to try to lure top flight college students into the government. And I forgot what it, but it was a It was only the first department of the government that apparently volunteered to help these people was the Department of Agriculture. And one of the newest parts of that happened to be the Surplus Marketing Administration. But I think they had about totally 50 college students from all over the United States who were done outstandingly well in their college that were offered this thing. I was not in that category, but the fellow who was chosen, I was one of my best friends, and when he'd been telling me about this program, and he was going to go on to Harvard Business School, and I said, would you mind if I try to work in on your spot? And he said, no, go to it. Well, at first they said, oh no, we have plenty of candidates. I said, well, I think I would like this, and I smelled a job, so I was out pushing and tried to sell myself, and eventually they took me. You know, I was sent almost immediately upon graduation to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And the caliber of the guys that were in it were all top flight, so it was, it sounds horrible to me today, but the associations, everything were first class.
I was going to say, what did you learn, or looking back on it, that particular experience, how did it help you, affect your subsequent career?
Well, it helped me to know the importance of people working together and getting along, and it also you had to be adaptable for this job to be successful. You're calling on every kind of school there was in California. You were calling on small community welfare organizations to make them a part of, if they weren't already a part of, getting some of these surplus foods, and calling on the schools was very interesting because there was a huge wide margin of difference between the schools, and persuading them that they ought to become a part of the school lunch program. And you were really sort of in a selling mode, and but anyway, I did enjoy it, but I knew the war was coming, and I better get out of it.
So how long were you in that?
Well, I was only from June 1st I was in it until, I guess, the November of 41.
And then you simply enlisted in...
No, I did not enlist.
What?
No, I... No. I sensed the war was coming. And I knew enough about the Navy, and having planned to go to the Naval Academy, I didn't want to go into volunteer for the Navy. I wanted to become a naval officer. One of the key reasons was I wanted to get married, and I didn't have enough money. I didn't have any money. And so I knew that the salary for a naval officer was pretty darn good, and so I started after to try to get commission in the Navy. And I first went side of naval intelligence was the thing. And so I applied with that, and I had to appear before all these boards of about 10 admirals and so on, and they were grilling me, and I was obviously not equipped or experienced enough for naval intelligence. But they said, look, we think you'd make a good naval officer, and apply down in San Diego, and I did, and got commissioned. It was a miracle. It was a real miracle. And I didn't have to go through the naval training schools or the equivalents of ROTCs. They had a name for them. But for the Navy particularly, they had their own name. But a lot of people did go. And that was about a 3-4 month course you went through, and then they either accepted you to be recommended for commission or not. But I skipped all that. I lucked out. I lucked out in so many ways during the war and everything. I mean,
you were only in there for a very
and surplus marketing. But then in the Navy, I was in a good 4 years.
Yeah. But how long before Pearl Harbor did you actually?
I was in on November 1st, and Pearl Harbor was December 7th. But it wasn't very long.
Yeah.
But as I told you earlier, I moved from being this naval operating base outside of L.A. I had a neighbor who was a naval pilot on an aircraft carrier in those days. It just started, really. And he said, look, you're in the, you're called a DVS officer, which was Deck Volunteer Special. And he said, you ought to switch to becoming an AVS officer. Meanwhile, I had glasses on, and you couldn't fly. There you had to have perfect eyesight. But he said, switch over to my category, and I'll take you out to the Pacific on an aircraft carrier. So he took me up in his airplane and everything, and I got, and he also gave me an early foretaste of really that the naval aviation end of the Navy was the creme de creme and the best officers, etc. So that was another reason I tried to make the switch and was successful. And I went out to the Pacific with him then. We were assigned to a carrier. It was a converted oil tanker that we had gotten from the British. And the thing was in the Southwest Pacific, and just before we got to it, it was sunk. In a big battle out there, I forgot the name of the battle. It was in early 1942. I think it was about March or something like that. But in any event, then got sent back to San Diego, and then I was sent to Washington, D.C. And
doing what?
Well, this is amazing. I have so many lucky things that I feel like I've had an idyllic existence. And with the DuPont Company and the Navy, this business with carrier being sunk, that was one of about 5 episodes where, just by luck, I changed airplanes one time when I was flying out to Pearl Harbor. Changed airplanes, and the plane I got off of was crashed an hour later, and I didn't get off on my own. I was traveling with a fellow who was senior to me, and he said, why are we doing it? We have high orders, and we're heading out to the Pacific. Let's switch to a commercial airline. And I tried to talk him out of it, but then we switched. We got to San Francisco. The plane we had just gotten off crashed. But I have about 5 episodes. I don't want to put this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I lucked out there. I lucked out in so many things. I feel very blessed with the luck I've had, and it was luck. Well, I was working hard the whole time, I gotta say that. But
so, in what you went to Washington to?
My first boss. This was in the Chief of Naval Operations Office. They wanted, my first boss was Douglas Dillon, who became Secretary of Treasury under Kennedy, and he was Secretary of State. I'm not so sure, I can't remember what. He had 2 big government jobs, but he had previously, under his father, run the Wall Street firm of Dillon Reed. And but through him, I got to know his father and a guy named Barney Baruch, and you would never have heard him, but historically was quite well known in those days. But they came down every weekend to see young Douglas. Young Douglas was a good 10 years older than I was. And but in any event, I'd meet them every time. In fact, if Doug was in a meeting, I would try to entertain him till he got free. But in any event, I was there quite a while, but then went out to Pacific.
It was really a staff
position. To a degree, you might say I was a leg man for Douglas Dillon and his boss. But I got to know Admiral King and a whole naval top staff. In essence, the job turned out to be I was working more for the on Admiral King's staff for the air operations officer. So I got to meet the cream of the naval aviation, because they would come in here and spend a tour of duty in Washington, go out. Some of them become the head of the Southwest Pacific Fleet, and we're on top jobs under...
This is pretty heady for someone in your early 20s, isn't
it? I know, it was. It was very heady. But fortunately, I got along with these guys well, and they liked me and really guided me extremely well. So I was lucky as the devil. But should we get back to the main?
Yeah. Well, what were you learning in that?
Oh, I was time. Again learning how to operate. Get things done. When you had, for instance, in this Navy stuff, you had Artemus Gates, who was the Secretary of the Navy, and he was always doing what he should have been doing as an administrator, trying to hold down costs. While we were interested in winning the war as fast as possible, and those two things conflict in a way you can't believe. And we were trying to get new squadrons, new more airplanes and this, and we wanted to move. So I was helping these guys to get the paperwork through and get approvals and